You can think of today's show as a bit of a thought experiment. What changes if we make relationships at every level of the school the priority? It is a thought experiment, but we also have lots of experience that tells us how that experiment could turn out. Hello, colleagues, and welcome to the Assistant Principal Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Frederick Buskey. We are all on a leadership journey. Every day we have a chance to grow. Every day we have a chance to help others grow. My goal and the goal of this podcast is to help you grow into being a strategic leader. A leader who puts people before purpose, who solves problems instead of treating symptoms, and who understands the difference between progress and action. Through this podcast, my daily email, and virtual programs, I'm working to build a network of inspired and inspiring school leaders. Let's get started on today's adventure and this unique opportunity to learn to live and lead better. Dr. Faiza M. Jamil is a former K-12 teacher and currently serves as Associate Professor of Education and Human Development in the area of learning sciences at Clemson University. Faiza is the founding director of the Contexts of Learning and Development Lab, where she conducts interdisciplinary research with a focus on educational equity across learning contexts. She is the author of Public Education in Turbulent Times, Innovative Strategies for Leadership and Learning. Faiza, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
It's so good to reconnect. Hey, we always start the show with a couple questions. And the first of those is, what are you celebrating today?
Oh my goodness. You know, it's funny you should ask because I just did a post on it on Twitter. I am celebrating my teenage son, my 10th grader. Because he is writing in his AP seminar class and he is just thinking deeply and I'm just so proud of him.
Wow. That's awesome. Anytime a parent can celebrate a sophomore son, that's a good day.
It's a hard work getting here, right?
Yes. Faiza, is there a story that will help listeners understand why you're doing the work you're doing?
You know, there's probably many of them. The work I'm doing currently related to a book I wrote, I can pinpoint to one point in the last few years. We don't treat teachers well enough in this country, and I think maybe around the world sometimes. And so the work I've been doing is motivated by my experience as a teacher in K-12 settings and watching some of my most brilliant colleagues leave the field because it just became an untenable situation. And during the pandemic, that transition from when teachers like nurses were heroes, right? Because they were getting kids fed and educated to the place where suddenly they became the target of some unkindness. I recall specifically a school board meeting that was televised and the district had lost three teachers in the last week. And one of the teachers rose to speak and asked one of the board members if they would wear their masks in sort of respect for the teachers who had passed. And that one particular board member didn't do it. Like just that simple act of just lifting that mask back up over their face. And I thought, wow, right? Like these people who raise our kids with us, who are the people who help children go from, learning how to read and write to educating our doctors and our lawyers and our engineers and scientists. How do we get there? And I think that is sort of the question that has always led me to this work is how do we do it better? How do we make this a profession that people are proud to be a part of?
Wow. Wasn't expecting that story. you know, there's a whole podcast in there, I think, because my experience in some ways is similar to yours. And in the the march to accountability and in the narrowing of what it means, of what accountability means, and that tyranny of numbers, it makes it really challenging, especially I think for the most creative and curious and risk willing, the teachers willing to take risks. School has become particularly hard for those folks. Okay,
yeah.
That's another podcast.
I hate to be a downer. But I think what you're saying is it resonates with me. It's our narrowing of purpose, I think, sometimes in why we are teachers, why we have schools sometimes, in my opinion, in unnecessary ways. I'm a measurement person, right? So I like the numbers and I hate what we're using them for.
And this podcasting is all about people, right? That's where we're going with this. And we're going into relationships. And before we start in on that part of it, I just want to give listeners just a little bit of history, because you and I go back around 10, over 10 years, 11 years, I think. So when I was at Clemson University, our offices were right across the hall from each other.
Yeah.
And when I think back on my career in higher education, my biggest regret is that for 6 years, we had offices across from each other, and our good friend Allison and Nafis were right. We were that kind of foursome there. And we, in 6 years, did not eat lunch together a single time.
Yeah.
And we were all at our computers and we were working and we were eating. And I can't tell you what was in those emails. I can't tell you what I was writing. And I don't wish I had spent more time with my email or more time writing papers or grading or whatever. I wish that I had taken more time with you and with Allison and Nafis. And I share that very intentionally because I want people listening to understand when you get on the other side, you are not going to say, I wish I worked harder, but you may say, I wish I had invested more time in relationships with the people around me.
You know, that is such a fantastic point, because when I think back to our interactions, I don't even remember what we talked about. I just remember the warm feeling of, these are my people. These are people I interact with, that I care for. Yeah, I can totally see that. That's what made that a time that I really enjoyed at work.
Yeah. And the irony is that, I mean, we did invest in relationships. We could have invested a lot more time, but we did at least invest enough to have those connections and to appreciate each other. And we were on some silly awards committee or something.
Yes, it was.
Right?
Scholarships and awards.
Yeah. And it should have been a horrible experience. Just the worst kind of committee to be on. But we had fun because we had those relationships. And I think we probably did a little bit better job. And that's the thing. When we take time to invest in relationships, the other stuff that we're doing becomes richer and more meaningful.
Yep, I agree with you. I do think that, you know, of all the committees I've been on, that was one of the few I feel like I looked forward to our meetings, because the work was there, but the fellowship, the camaraderie as we went through it, was really what helped that be a time that felt more meaningful than just, I mean, the awards were important, right? They helped pay for people to go to school. But the actual work part, I think, just came from a place of joy. And I wish more committees I was on operated that way, that more of the work I did was based in those quality interactions with other human beings. But we're busy, and I think sometimes we lose sight of that.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, that's the segue into the discussion, right? That when we talk about school purpose, there's this tension between, I think, the purpose, which has become very distorted based on how we measure how we're doing on that purpose, and then the holistic purpose versus then the individual purpose, and what we're really trying to do at a human level, at an individual level. Can we start there?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a great place to start. So I would say from when we've had some discussions recently about this, just in conversation, and I think that one of the things that has stood out to me is that variation, right? Like it seems like most of us have some generalized sense of why we're there, right? We're there to educate kids, we're there to, to make the world a better place broadly through our work. There's some drive in that way, but it's the translation. It's how purpose within our individual context with the either little people or big people, depending on who we teach, in front of us. How does that translate into day-to-day interactions and decision making? I think that individual level of purpose is often where there's disagreement or where we operationalize it differently.
Yeah. I do a lot of work with intern teachers. I have never heard an intern teacher say, "I can hardly wait to get in my classroom so that I can drive the fourth grade reading scores up to some high level."
Right.
And
Yes.
yet, we school leaders often talk about how are we going to increase scores? And there is a difference between increasing scores and getting better at helping kids read so that they have future agency in their lives. Those are two different things. And when we conflate them and we talk about the numbers instead of the idea behind the numbers, I think we're getting away from that individual purpose.
Absolutely. And I think that's just it. For a school leader, those numbers might be an important tool in understanding how close we're getting, right? Like, are we making traction in sort of measurable, understandable ways? They're great for looking at a building. I don't know how great they are for looking at the work of an individual teacher sometimes. They're not meant for that, right? They can help as far as for teachers to say, okay, compared to last year, are my students again on average doing better? Are they learning more? But that individual level purpose is captured through observation, through actually walking into a classroom and seeing how students are interacting with their reading materials and with their teacher. And how often, come on, how often do we hear from teachers that no one's actually visited my classroom? I've not had an administrator set foot in this room this year. So then all we have is those numbers, right? Like, how else do we know if we're not actually interacting with each other as professionals, but also if our leaders aren't in our rooms, if they're not walking through those hallways and actually talking to the kids?
Yeah,
How do we
yeah.
know?
So I'm going to string together three things, and then we're going to dive in.
Okay.
A couple weeks ago, I was at a conference with a couple of teachers and then five middle school kids. And I asked the middle school kids, "How frequently in the course of a day do you hear your name from teachers?" And one of the kids said, "I have one teacher." This is middle school. "I have one teacher who greets me every day and says my name." One.
Wow, that's crazy.
In your conversations, my conversations with teachers, as you just mentioned, it is so frequent for teachers to say, "I haven't been observed. I have not had a meaningful conversation with any of my leaders about my teaching." So you've got kids craving to be recognized. You have teachers craving to be recognized. And then I consistently hear from principals, assistant principals, "I can't get into classrooms," because they're craving for that relationship too. Administrators got into this job because they wanted to have impact on kids and they wanted to be able to support the great work of teachers. And it's breaking down at every point in the continuum. So we're both advocating here for a school that prioritizes relationships. How do we do that?
It's so funny that you should say that because as you were talking, I thought we're both craving for a more human approach to schooling. And when you asked me about why did this work, right? For in grad school, I kept being asked what my research interest was, and I still struggle to put it into words. But it really is understanding the lives of teachers as humans, right? Like as whole living human beings and the impact they have on students as whole living human beings. And And I wonder if that's part of it, right? Are we stripping away too much of what makes us whole living humans in our efforts to innovate and raise test scores? Are we just structuring our days in ways that don't leave room for that? So I personally, and in my work, really try to understand the context within and around the school and how people are spending their time. What are they investing in and prioritizing? Because I do believe that if we don't create the time in our schedules for those interactions, then they can't happen, right? If we don't have the right people in the right jobs so that everyone's needs are being met, then creating spaces for that human connection is out of the question, right? We're like on the hamster wheel all the time.
Yeah.
But there's no reason we can't change how we structure our day in our school. And I'll give you one quick example of that. I did so much work in professional development and working with schools and teachers in my early career. And what came out of it was, hey, teachers need common planning time, right? Like they need to be able to sit down with people who do a similar job and talk about this. And it felt like it was the mountain that couldn't be moved. And now, you know, 4 years after the start of the pandemic, when I talked, that seems to be something that just happened. In a lot of places, we just made that change during the pandemic because there was no other way to get the job done. And so there's so much more flex time and common planning time, and we're being so intentional to combat learning loss or, you know, something like that. But why didn't we just do that to begin with? We were just as capable. And so I do think that those structural pieces make such a big difference.
Yeah. And looking back at my own teaching career, so I left the classroom 2001. So it's been a whole career's worth of, for some people, but we did not have collaborative planning time. It was very rare in schools back then. And so I do think educationally, we've gotten much better about creating common time for teachers. One of the challenges, we overschedule that time, right? Or
yes.
Not overschedule, we structure it in such a way that is so incredibly task focused that we don't get the level and the kind of collaboration that drives those relationships and that feels human.
Well, and that's, you just said it right there. We are so task oriented instead of person oriented in how we approach this profession that is all about people. I think, you know, like we hear this in like about doctor's offices, right? From an organizational perspective, doctors are supposed to care about people's health. How often does your doctor actually ask you about your whole health? Usually it's like you're seeing your, you know, cardiologist and they want to know about your cholesterol level, but not about Frederick as a whole living human. And I think teaching has become like that. Like we have professionalized it in the wrong ways in some cases, I think. And part of what we think of as professionalization, right? And as I'm a learning scientist, I'm in this learning sciences program at Clemson, I think of it as expertise. And we value expertise. We want people to have master's degrees and certifications. But one of the challenges of expertise is that, you know, we lose some of our ability to see the whole because it becomes so automated, right? So much of the process piece becomes automated that we stop thinking about it. And it's in that thinking about how we're saying hello to our students as they walk in the door, how we are addressing them, what the tone of our voice is, what opportunities we're creating for our students to interact with each other in learning. So that, you know, how do you do group work if you don't actually know the people you're supposed to do group work with? Because you literally don't get any other time to talk in the day other than when you're doing group work, right? Like, so all the things we know about what drives good relationships, in some ways we've professionalized ourselves and become these experts that are no longer paying attention to those details. And we got to go back to those basics, I think, to make the change, right? To do the thing of like, how do we fix this? I think we have to start thinking like day one teachers in some cases.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, as you talked about that expertise, it made me think experts get paid for talking, not for listening.
Yes.
Right. But how do we build relationships? We don't build relationships by talking. We build relationships by listening.
Absolutely. And by asking the questions, like I cannot tell you as I'm talking to people, and I'm doing some book marketing and I'm trying, and so I'm connecting maybe with people that I haven't been connecting with recently, at least in the 2 years that I was writing, right? And so as I'm doing that, I get so many questions that are about how do we fix kids? How do we fix this thing about kids? Kids are disengaged. Kids are coming to school and they don't know how to behave. Kids have spent too much time in front of screens. And I'm like, when was the last time you asked a kid that question? Why aren't we asking kids? Well, like, what do you need? Like, if you're disengaged, what is about this situation that's making you not want to engage? What would help you be more engaged? We fix teachers. Like, what do you need as a teacher
Thank
to
you.
be more invested, to be motivated, or just to have the tools you need? Like, what are the basic tools you need that are preventing you from doing this job in the way you think you can do it best?
Yeah, I suggest to assistant principals and principals that a question you can ask your teachers is, what do you wish your kids were doing better or more of or less of? Right? What is it if your kids would actually do X, you would feel better about your classroom. What is that? Because most of the time, whatever they name, the teacher plays a role in that. And so
Yes.
that's then the place, rather than me tell you what I think you need to do in your teaching to be better, what if I ask you what you want your kids to do better? And then I help you develop the practices that get your kids to that point. And now I'm serving you and you're serving them.
Can I ask another question? And so I would even push back a little bit on that as sort of someone who really comes at it from a developmental perspective, right? What would prevent an assistant principal from, as they're walking through the hallway and they see a kid doing something they don't want, asking them what they need to do that? Or what do they need from their teacher to actually want to be in that room instead of taking 10 trips to the bathroom? Or, like, what is going on there? And I don't think we examine what is going on and ask the people it's going on with enough.
So I talk about the iceberg model of student behavior. And most of the time, one of the challenges, especially if we're in urgent mode, right, we treat the tip of the iceberg. And the tip of the iceberg is that kid being out of class or language use or whatever it is. We treat the tip of the iceberg. But there's a whole bunch of stuff under the water. And we can't know what it is if we don't ask the student. What's going on? What's happening here?
Yeah. And it's so funny because I think 9 times out of 10, they can tell us. They can tell us. And so, it's funny. I'm a big fan of Brené Brown, right? And the stories that we create, the narrative, right? The story that I tell myself. And I think that one of the things, the time in the last few years, we've been through all this disruption. And in some ways, while we were all out of our comfort zone, I think it kind of showed to us, it laid bare that we tell ourselves a lot of stories about what goes on in schools without really wondering if they're true. And I think sometimes that answer doesn't come from within us, it comes from someone else. Like, it comes from the other people in the situation. And we can ask that. And so one of the things that I think really changes this is vulnerability. How can we model as teachers, as leaders, as academics, more vulnerability so that we don't have the answers? I don't have all the answers. What I do have is some tools that might help me ask the questions, right? And I would never presume to walk into a school and tell anyone what to do in their school, but I think we could probably work together to figure some things out, right? Like, let's do with instead of doing to. And I do think that teachers do that to kids. Administrators do that to teachers. Like, we do a lot of doing to instead of doing with. And I think that's a space, that's a real practical way we can reframe the situation that would maybe give us some very different information.
Yeah. And so I'm trying to think about some specific things that we can do that we can suggest to people. Here I am saying, right, the conversation is we need them to tell us. But Having seen schools where these practices exist, a couple things to think about in terms of having that more human-centered approach in your school. So I think one is to get in the habit of asking people why.
Yes.
Right? Let's not assume. Let's ask why. And that's about great things. You had a great lesson. Ooh, tell me more about that, right? What made it great? Also, yeah, when you're struggling in an area, why is that a challenge? Let's start to deconstruct that. I think part of it is stop trying to fix things and spend and invest more time trying to figure out what's happening.
I think right? That's so true, right? We look for solutions when we don't actually know what the problem is yet.
Right. Yeah.
You know, something specific that I saw, you know, we talk a lot about the mental health challenges that students have been facing coming back from pandemic lockdowns and remote schooling and broadly in society, right? Where there's just a lot of challenge there. And one of the things that I think really supported that relationship building and helping meet those needs in schools that really did it well, that dealt with trauma well, is really creating mechanisms to have those conversations. So for example, you know, one of the schools that I visited with, and actually even at the district level, in our research for our book, is they created advisory boards that weren't just students, oh, sorry, just teachers or parents or community members. The superintendent had a student advisory board through every big change and challenge. And he had kids on there from third to 12th grade, right? So he actually met fairly consistently and continues to with students to ask them, when we go online all day, right, we're going to just do it. And like everywhere else, they replicated the school day. But his third graders were able to tell him, hey, I can't sit at a screen like this for so long. It's not the same as sitting at my desk in school. Can we do something different? And they literally, based on that feedback, restructured their day to have more brain breaks, to have more times where teachers just got online and played video games with kids, you know, because that helped them refocus. But I'm not sure that as adults, they would have really thought of that in the same time frame or as quickly. Like the diagnosis was right there.
Yeah.
Well, you know, can we create mechanisms to really have those conversations? I think leaders play a really important role in that. I think teachers do too.
Yeah. And I think if we can get away from the idea that we have to fix stuff, that that's our job's not to fix stuff. Our job is to help uncover what the real challenges are, what the root problems are. And then we can work with others to improve the situation, but we got to stop trying to fix stuff. I think I like what you said about kind of structuring for relationships. And so any of those collaboration times that we have with people, think about how you build in and how you create a way of doing those meetings that is more individual focused that gives room for agency for people to collaborate in ways that are human. I remember when I was a special ed coordinator, I had two special ed teachers that they teamed together and they would begin IEP meetings at the very beginning of the meeting. They would just not have any papers out. They would just look at the parents and they would say, "We are so glad that we have Michael in class. He has these skills, and let me give you an example of a time, you know, everybody was tense and Michael gave this joke and everybody relaxed and he's just so wonderful." They started every meeting like that. And the rest of that meeting was a piece of cake. Even if there were real debates to be had, and frequently these were high need kids. So a lot of times there were disagreements between the parent and the teacher, but by starting class starting the meeting the way they did, those parents knew that Gene and Teresa, A, knew their kid,
yes,
B, respected their kid, and C, really cared. So now we can do the work because we've established that human relationship. We've established the value, the trust, and we know, you know, that we're engaging this in a common way.
I think that any moment we can take just even a second to value something in another person, to recognize it with words, however big or small, is not a second that's lost. That's not a moment lost, right? And it doesn't have to be a big to-do. If we could just do that, like as you're walking in the classroom, right? As students are coming into your class, yes, greet them by name. But if you notice someone has a new backpack, ask them, hey, you know, tell me about this or whatever the character is. Ask them what they're reading, as if you see them pick up a book. When I see my, you know, students listening to music, I learned all about football when I got to Clemson and actually became a football fan because it was such a thing everyone cared about. And I thought, I can't relate to people here if I don't actually know what they're passionate about. And I just think that even things like that, if we could just invest a little bit, right, in knowing people, I think you're right. Those are that changes the whole conversation.
And I can hear people in the audience saying what I said during most of my career. I don't have time. Right. I have stuff to do. I don't have time. We got to get in. We're going to get this done. And it's not about time, right? None of us have time to do everything. So you get to choose what you're going to invest your time in. I mean, you can invest it in people. You can spend it on tasks. You have that choice, but know this, where you choose to devote your time reflects your values. So if I say, I really care about people, I'm people focused, but then I'm spending all my time on tasks and I can't take a few minutes and invest that in people, then I'm either not being true to my values or I don't hold the value that I said I hold.
Well, and I would say in addition to that, you need data to back that up. Right. So here is a suggestion, a concrete suggestion. If you're someone who says, I do have this value and I don't have time, identify a spot in your day, set up your little iPhone and just record your interactions for that moment. Like whether it's as people are coming in and notice what you're actually spending your time doing. Mm-hmm. I actually did that for myself as a teacher. And I realized that part of what I did as a teacher was I spent that time calling out instructions to every individual student, like just repeating myself as they walked in so that everyone would be ready when we got started. Right. And I did air quotes when I said ready. Except after I spent all the time doing that, when everyone was finally in their seats, I did it all over again, right? And I had to kind of ask myself, you know, so this is a real life example. Wouldn't it be better for me to just spend that time? Because I'm going to have to say it all over again when everyone's attention is on me. Why not just write some stuff on the board that they can read themselves and be empowered when they walk in? And that gives me a whole 3 to 5 minutes to just connect with people.
Right.
And I don't have to feel guilty or like I'm wasting that time.
Right. But there's a shift, right? Because the shift is let's look for ways to prioritize relationships as opposed to let's look for ways to be more productive. And I guess I'm trying to, we have given a lot of different strategies and we've had a pretty wide ranging discussion here. And I've been thinking, okay, how do we start to tighten this and bring this back to something that's actionable? Again, if people go back and listen, there are lots of actionable strategies, but the mindset shift is from how do we get more stuff done to how do we build opportunities? How do we be intentional about connecting people and building opportunities for us to develop those relationships at every level in this school?
So funny you should say that, Frederick. I have a little tool that I have developed that helps guide my thinking. And if you're okay with that, I will mention it here.
Yeah, I was just saying, we haven't got to the book yet. Tell us about the book.
So in my recent publication, my co-author, Javed Siddiqui, and I put out a book called Public Education in Turbulent Times. And in that book, One of the things we do is we kind of examine the challenges people faced in the pandemic. We actually have four case studies on four different school districts in different parts of the country, and we really focus in on places that were challenged with something specific. So as you can imagine, we talk about New York City and we look at a district in the Bronx that was a high point, lots of trauma, just massive amounts of death, right? Like the death rate was so high early in the pandemic. And so we look specifically at how they navigated that one big challenge. We in Minneapolis look at social justice issues and, the racial upheaval, the sort of upheaval that was really grounded in and not grounded in, but sparked by the murder of George Floyd. So these big things happened that really created challenge. After doing that, we spend the other half of our book really looking at what we learned, right? And one of the things we came out of this was something we call the Circle Model, which is the comprehensive, innovative, resilient, and contextualized lens on education. But it's a rubric, it's a tool in which I find it helps to when I ask these big questions of how do I change this? I start from a place of purpose. But then we examine the realities of our specific context, right? Every school, every classroom is different, and there are ways to approach it that should be influenced by that. We think about within that sort of what innovations are possible. Like what can we change? We can't change everything. Some things are in our control and others aren't. And I think just clarifying that kind of focuses our thinking, but then really thinking about the people and the structures within that, right? So how are those structures and people interacting? And is that working well? Because oftentimes, if I make a decision about my individual purpose, like I'm going to prioritize relationships, to accomplish that, I also have to make structural adjustments. Like, how am I going to spend my time? And how am I going to reorganize a process in my classroom? I think at the school level, we have to do the same thing, right? Leaders have to think about, you're right, we can't do it all, but we have to kind of have some guiding principle, right? Like we have to some way to organize how we approach thinking, and that helps us kind of do it over and over again, because
Yeah.
we have to be intentional about how we're framing the conversation for with ourselves.
I love the way you describe this, because I talk a lot about school leaders' jobs are keep everybody safe, meet your legal requirements, and then support and grow your teachers. And to me, support is specifically about structures. It's about purpose. It's about resources. And then growth is that focused on support on the individual and helping them. And I think you've got both those pieces in here, right? Because part of our work is structural, and then part of it is that work on the individual person, and the structures support all people. And then we've got that individual work.
Well, and I
But
wonder too if part of it is empowering teachers, right? So that whole process you just described, a microcosm of that goes on in every classroom. And in that way, the teacher is leading that process. And so often, I don't know if we give enough guidance on how that's what it should be happening. I shouldn't be trying to control that internal process, but I can sure help you kind of think through that and how you can and enact those same. That same keep people safe, meet the legal requirements of teaching, and then support and empower the growth of each individual student.
yeah. Well, and I mean, growth, we have this idea as leaders, we're supposed to have those answers. Going back to earlier, we're supposed to be the expert so we can diagnose what's wrong and then we can fix it. And that really undermines our ability to actually have a stronger, sustained impact, because it is about collaboration. And if we want our students to learn as teachers, we need to be more collaborative with our students, not just telling them, this is what you're going to learn, this is how you're going to learn it, right? We need to collaborate with them. And as leaders in schools, we need to do the same thing. Helping our teachers become better, that's a collaborative process. That's not us putting on our fix-it hats.
Well, and it's so funny because one of the points I make in the book is about There are some false dichotomies in education, and one of them is teachers versus leaders. And really, we need to start re rethinking that as teachers, as leaders.
I've been doing a training and Now and Next, which is a program we have in Western North Carolina for nonprofit and governmental leaders. And in our final session, we did coaching rounds. And when we were debriefing that, they talked about what an enjoyable experience that was because they had the relationships with the other people. They felt safe. They trusted them, right? And I just had this aha moment, like that's what coaching should be,
Yes,
right?
absolutely.
We should
Yeah.
be working together to solve those problems.
Well, it's funny. I think I simultaneously we want to flatten the hierarchy in schools to allow for that. And we also need to create more of a ladder, right? Like teachers need to have opportunities to be leaders and to lead in different ways. It doesn't have to be as a principal or an assistant principal or even as part of their permanent job. But if we can start sharing those hats, I think it first, just increases the capacity of all leaders because they can't do everything. But also, it, I think, changes the relationship of the teacher with the school. I think my investment as a teacher was different when I felt that kind of ownership. And that's something that, again, we also could do in our classrooms. When students feel that ownership and have those opportunities to lead their peers, the same thing happens, that there is just more investment. And it's something everyone gets to share in then. I think that's where the collaboration starts.
This has been great. It's
Yeah.
been lovely talking to you. I have a couple questions left
Okay.
as we start to wrap this up. So the first one is, what part of your own leadership are you trying to get better at?
It is so funny you should ask that question because I actually have been really working on this. I am the director of a research lab at Clemson, the Contexts of Learning and Development Lab, and I am the leader of a lot of people, like PhD students. They are learning, and so there's this whole mentorship piece to doing that, to training the next generation of scholars, to helping them understand how to communicate with school leaders and practitioners and teachers. And I have been working on a mentorship map for myself. So, thinking about where I'm getting mentorship so that I can grow, but then also helping them each kind of plan this piece out. I think leaders especially are so busy taking care of others, right? There's such a service component to leading, that we forget that we also need to be led in very specific parts of our lives, in our thinking, in our work, in our relationship building, right? And we got to build our network. We need our village.
All right, if listeners could take away just one thing from today's show, what would it be?
Wow. I think that yeah, there's so many things. I think the thing would be it's important to reflect on why we do this and how we're getting there, right? So, why are we doing this? And if relationships are an important part of why you do this, if you care for people, then how are you doing there, right? Like, is that where you're putting your time and your energy and your passion? Because you have to do that if that's how you plan on getting there.
Yep. Your actions and time and decisions reflect your values.
Absolutely.
Faiza, we've talked about the book Public Education in Turbulent Times, Innovative Strategies for Leadership and Learning. If people want to get their hands on that book, what's the easiest way for them to do that?
You can get it on Amazon, so that's a straightforward way, but also it's published through Palgrave, so hopefully we'll have a link in there and you can order it right from the publisher as well. And it's available in pretty much all the major bookstore chains.
Okay, awesome. We will have that those links in the in the we will have those links in the show notes, and you've got your LinkedIn here, so people can go online and find you at Faiza Jamil on LinkedIn, right? So,
Absolutely.
all right, Faiza, this
And
has been
follow me on
great.
Twitter too. That I would love. EduProf, EDU Prof Jamil is me on Twitter. So please follow me. I'm constantly talking about the stuff that I'm doing, and I'd love to have more people doing that.
All right. And I've got all those links in there. Faiza, thanks so much for coming on. It's been great to catch up and to take this deep dive into how we make education more human.
Frederick, it's been a pleasure just to catch up, to talk, and I so appreciate the work you do. So thank you for having me.
All right. We'll see you soon.
All right, bye.
We covered a lot of ground today, but I encourage you to do three things. First, monitor your own inner dialogue. When you say you don't have time to listen or build relationships, what are you actually doing with that time? Two, begin asking people, teachers and students, what would make school better for you? And finally, use your expertise to ask powerful questions instead of giving powerful answers. Leadership is a journey, and thank you for choosing to walk some of this magical path with me. You can find links to all sorts of stuff in the show notes, including my website, frederickbuskey.com. I love hearing from you, so consider emailing me at frederick@frederickbuskey.com or connecting with me on LinkedIn. Please remember to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast as it helps other people find the show. Have a great rest of the week. Be present for others, and more importantly, take time to reflect and recover so you can continue to live and lead better. Cheers.